Would you put The Simpsons on a list of the best TV shows ever? Well, our guest this hour did. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will find out why, and we will find out the other shows that he thinks are the greatest American shows of all time. And we will welcome your nominations at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Alan Sepinwall, a TV critic and writer of the segment What's Alan Watching for HitFix.com. He is also one of the authors for the new book, TV, the book. Two experts pick the greatest American shows of all time. Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot for being here. Well, before we dig into your selections, I wanted to ask you about last night's Emmy Awards. Game of Thrones and Veep won for their categories, winning the awards for Best Drama and Best Comedy. So what do you think? Do you think those were you expecting that?
I was expecting that. The Emmy rules changed recently in a way that makes it very hard for anything to beat an HBO show, let alone HBO shows that people like as passionately as people like Game of Thrones and Veep. I thought the most recent season of Veep was perhaps its best. I don't think the latest season of Game of Thrones was its best, but at times it was great. I was rooting for the Americans, but it was a fun night.
Well, I guess I don't want to go too far afield, but why is it so hard to beat an HBO show?
It would be very wonky for me to explain, but the short version is they changed the rules to allow more people to vote in every category. HBO has the biggest voting block among the Television Academy, and so if you vote along party lines, an HBO show is going to be the favorite more often than not.
Yeah, a lot of people around here like Game of Thrones. I have never seen it. I'm so bad. I'll have to check it out sometime. But it's won just a tremendous amount of Emmys. Judging by that, conceivably, could you make the argument that Game of Thrones could be among the best shows of all time?
Not really. I mean, a lot of its awards are for technical categories. It has tremendous special effects and, you know, sound design and everything else. And so the reason it set records the last couple of years for the most Emmy wins in a season by one show is more because of those technical things. It's a very good show. And, you know, when Matt Zellersites and I wrote this book, we had a rule saying we weren't really going to consider shows that were still on the air for the top 100 unless they'd been around forever, like The Simpsons. And so Game of Thrones isn't in there. It's in a separate section on current series. Maybe if we do a second edition and it's done, it might finish somewhere in the top 100, but it's not going to be like the greatest show of all time.
What's your criteria?
We sat down and we'd said, you know, we probably know what our top 100 is, but let's try to come up with something vaguely scientific to sort it out. And so we said, what are things that we value as critics, as fans of television? And we came up with six categories, which were innovation, influence, consistency, performance and characterization, storytelling, and peak. So how great it was at its very best. And we rated each show on a scale of 1 to 10. We added up our scores. We put it into a spreadsheet. And we, for the most part, got a top 100, although we wound up with a five-way tie for first place. And so part of the book is a long debate that we had trying to figure out what should actually be the greatest show of all time.
So the top five shows on your list, The Simpsons, The Sopranos, The Wire, Breaking Bad, and Cheers. So those are the final five. Those are did you name them all number one then?
They were originally tied for number one, and there's a long, probably 8,000-word transcript of a G-chat argument we had over 3 days going back and forth where, to boil it down, Matt was arguing passionately for The Sopranos, I was arguing passionately for The Simpsons, and I won.
And somebody listening right now might have another idea, and they could be right, too?
Anybody could be right. One of the things we say in the book is that this is our top 100. We're not trying to hand wisdom down from the mountaintop and say, these are the 100 greatest shows of all time. So it is written, so it shall be done forever and ever. These are things we love. These are things we think are great. And at this particular moment in time, in the fall of 2016, we would say, these are the greatest shows ever. Ask me in a month. Ask me in 5 years, and the list could be very different. Ask somebody else, and they're going to make their own list, and I think their own list would be great, too. one of the reasons we wanted to do this is because there had been so few attempts by anybody to sort of canonize television in the way that there are constantly books and lists and other things about the greatest movies of all time, the greatest books of all time, the greatest albums of all time, and TV just never quite got that respect, even though right now TV is really remarkable.
Yeah, why do you say that? I mean, a lot of people think, oh, it's the boob tube. It's probably the best it's been.
This is the best television has ever been, the last 15 years or so. And right now, if you can't find a great television show, you are not looking hard enough, because between the 500 scripted series that are going to air in primetime at some point in 2016 and easy access to the greatest shows of all time, you know, everything from Lucy to The Sopranos to The Wire, it's just there's no better time to be watching television.
We're going to talk about the best TV shows of all time, and we'll hear some clips and some music, and we will welcome your thoughts, your questions, your own nominations. What do you think is the best TV show ever, and why? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Alan Sipinwall, who is the co-author of TV, the Book. Two experts pick the greatest American shows of all time. And as mentioned, The Simpsons made it to the number one spot on the list. And tell us what makes The Simpsons so great that it's number one, Alan.
A few different things. One, it was better longer than anything else has ever been. So even if you don't like the show of the last 10 or 15 years, the first dozen of The Simpsons is the greatest comedy of all time, and it's not even close. It was just better longer than anything else. It's done more things. It's satirized more subjects. There's basically a Simpsons quote for every occasion, because they've covered everything. They've predicted everything. They were doing jokes about a Donald Trump presidency, I think, a decade ago. They're on top. They're smart. It's also a really great examination of family dynamics on top of being ridiculously funny. And at the end of the day, I love it. So it's both the greatest show, but also my favorite show, which is not always the same thing when you ask me about certain other medium.
Is this one of the few TV shows that is still currently on the air that you considered for the book?
Yes. Part of our thought was, if we had done this book 3-4 years ago, Homeland would have been in the top 100 because its first season was so good. And then Homeland kept going and it stopped being good very quickly, and so it wouldn't have been eligible. And so we wanted to be able to judge shows that were completed. But The Simpsons has been on the air for 27 years. So we feel like we have a big enough sample size that we can judge it regardless of however much longer it goes. South Park qualified under the same rules. And then there are certain other shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm, Louie and Arrested Development, which at the time we were planning it out, we thought might return or might not, but we never knew, so we figured we would treat those as completed entities. But for the most part, other stuff like Game of Thrones and The Leftovers and The Americans and Blackish are in a separate section of the book.
Yeah, and so as you mentioned, The Simpsons, now almost 3 decades strong. Is it, do you see it going and going and going, or is it time to bring it to an end?
No, it's not. There's this sort of myth that's built up around The Simpsons that it's awful, that it's embarrassing, that it's become a shadow of what it once was. And no, it is not as great as it was in season 4, because season 4 of The Simpsons is one of the greatest things television has ever done. But, you know, for the last 5 years or so especially, it's been very good, and they will do at least a half a dozen episodes a year that I would put up with the better of the stuff that they did in that first decade. I think they can keep going for a long time. I'm not one of these people who sees the later version of the show as somehow soiling its legacy. And, I mean, we'll see what happens when the cast members are no longer willing or ready to do it. Harry Shearer almost quit a few years ago, and that would have been interesting. But as of now, it's animated. The writers keep turning over, and I could see it going for a very long time if everyone involved wants it to.
Let's take a call from Jay in Madison. Hi, Jay.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so my question for the guest is that it's a great list and a very good criteria that you used to choose the shows. Me, if I'm going to spend time watching shows, the one criterion that really interests me is your criterion that you call storytelling. And I'm wondering, if you used that criterion alone and didn't pay attention to the other criteria, what would you, Alan Sipinwall, say were the best shows?
I think a lot of them would be the same, just sort of looking at the our list of scores, which is printed in the back of the book. Most of the shows that finished in that top five scored a 10 or close to a 10 in storytelling, which is encompassing not only the writing and the plotting, but the filmmaking, the production values, and everything else that's not covered in other categories. Of those shows in the top five, I would probably put Breaking Bad a little bit above the others because the filmmaking and the storytelling is really where that show excelled the most and was just sort of lovely to look at. But the top five would be largely the same. Maybe something else would probably be there ahead of Cheers, but that's about it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about The Sopranos, as your co-author was arguing for that to be number one. I guess your thoughts on why that was almost the best TV show ever.
The Sopranos had a little bit of a home field advantage for us because we were both TV critics at the Star-Ledger in New Jersey at the time the show was on the air. That's the paper that was at the end of Tony's driveway that he picked up at the start of every season. But, I mean, that's an extraordinary show. That and I Love Lucy are arguably the two most influential shows in TV history. The Sopranos changed everything. Everything that's sort of great about TV in this current era can largely be traced back to that show in terms of the rules it broke about how characters always have to be likable and sympathetic, about how audiences don't necessarily want narrative or moral complexity, just the filmmaking style, the fact that they were often built to anti-climaxes rather than traditional climaxes. It was just, and the performance of James Gandolfini and Edie Falco alone as Tony and Carmella, you know, that's Hall of Fame stuff right there.
Yeah, Breaking Bad is referenced as very clearly being a descendant of The Sopranos. Was Breaking Bad as successful merely because of The Sopranos?
No, I mean, Breaking Bad wouldn't exist without The Sopranos. It's successful because Vince Gilligan, the man who created it, and the other people who made it, including Bryan Cranston as Walter White, did such a great job of it. And in some ways, it's the more consistent show than The Sopranos is. It's the more narratively satisfying show than The Sopranos is. Like, if someone wants to tell me that they prefer Breaking Bad to The Sopranos, I understand why completely. Matt and I just tend to be drawn a little bit more to those things that reach a little higher and farther, even if they don't always necessarily get there. Whereas Breaking Bad, as extraordinary as it was, knew to stay in its lane, and The Sopranos tried stuff and not all of it worked.
We are talking about the best TV shows ever with our guest, the co-author of the book, TV, the book. Two experts pick the greatest American shows of all time. And The Sopranos on that list, Breaking Bad on that list, in at least the top five. There is also The Wire and Cheers, and number one was The Simpsons. What do you think? What do you consider the best TV show ever? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you walk through the garden, you better watch your... We are talking about the greatest American TV shows of all time, and our guest has put The Wire on that list. What about you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Alan Sepinwall is a TV critic, writer of the segment What's Alan Watching for HitFix.com. He's also one of the authors of the book, TV, the book. Two experts pick the greatest American shows of all time. All right, so what makes The Wire great?
The Wire is, to my mind, basically the pinnacle of what you can do with serialized television. That's a show where it told one story over five seasons. You had to watch every episode to fully appreciate it, but over the course of every episode, even within a season, it built and built and built until the whole was so much greater than the sum of its parts, and it started out as seeming just like a cop show and eventually sprawled to become about everything relevant in urban America today.
Let's take some calls. We go to Bill in Wauwatosa next. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
Morning.
In its day, The Cosby Show was very popular and considered truly groundbreaking. My question for your guest is, first of all, did Cosby Show even make the list, and how did he and his colleague treat it, given all of the personal problems Cosby's had in the last couple of years?
Alan?
Well, Cosby finished 40th overall on our top 100. Our feeling was we were going to rank it and score it entirely based on the quality of The Cosby Show, and The Cosby Show itself was a great comedy and an important comedy. The essay within the book, though, is entirely about what your caller just asked about, because I had been watching The Cosby Show with my kids literally right up until the day that Hannibal Buress did that stand-up routine that sort of got people talking about all of these monstrous things of which Bill Cosby is accused, and I realized we can't watch this anymore. So the whole essay in the book is about grappling with this idea of, can you separate art from the artist, especially in a case where, A, the artist is accused of doing so many terrible things, and B, the artist and the character he played are so inextricably linked, and it's just hard to look at Theo Cliff Huxtable anymore without thinking of Bill Cosby. And so it's a great show that basically nobody wants to watch anymore.
Let's go to Christy in Elkhorn now. Hi, Christy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So my question for the guest, I'm wondering about Sex and the City and wondering where you and your co-author placed that show, and just if you could speak about similar shows with strong female leads in them, and I'll take my spots off the air. Thank you.
Sex and the City finished, I think, 60th overall. We like that a lot. And, you know, any show that winds up in the top 100 is a show that we loved in some way. So that's one. The top five is very much that you've talked about before is very heavily weighted towards male characters. But we have Lucy in here. We have Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Gilmore Girls, Cagney and Lacey, Mary Hartman. Lots of other shows in the top 100 with strong or at least complicated female characters. So we certainly tried not to just weight it towards, you know, shows about dudes.
You know, they were making mention of last night's Emmys being the most diverse Emmys ever. Any thoughts on that?
Television was very white and very male for a really long time. It still is to an extent, but it's gotten better, so you can have not only a show about, you know, people being transgender, like Transparent winning several Emmys, you can have a show like Master of None on Netflix win for writing an episode about the Asian American immigrant experience, which, like, I can't imagine something like that even being made. Mm-hmm. 10, 15 years ago, let alone winning an Emmy. So things are getting better. They still have a long way to go, but one of the things we're finding with shows like that, with Blackish, Fresh Off the Boat, and a lot of others, is if you just change the perspective even slightly, you can be telling the same stories television has been telling for 50 years, and they will seem brand new. So regardless of just beyond any kind of social good, it's a creative good. It helps television be better when it's more diverse and more inclusive.
Well, one of my favorite shows growing up had a lead character who was female, and that was the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Where did that land on the list?
Mary Tyler Moore finished 19th overall. We loved that, and obviously Dick Van Dyke also finished very highly as well. And we have several other shows that Mary Tyler Moore produced in the top 100.
Yeah, we have Happy in Oconomowoc with us now. Hi, Happy.
I give a biggest shout-out for Frasier. I think the quality of their humor is fantastic. I think they work well with each other, each character. I think each character lends a lot to the show. And I just think it's one of the best there ever was.
And I always enjoyed Frasier, too, as he was the host of a call-in talk show. and I love your name, Happy. What about Frasier?
Frasier, I believe, finished 32nd overall. Great show. The rare spinoff that is close in value to its original, especially considering how great Cheers was. Kelsey Grammer played that character as long as almost anyone has in the history of television, other than, I think, James Arness on Gunsmoke, who did it for more episodes overall. But that's just a great character, a great show. So funny, and it managed to feel related to Cheers, but not like a copy of Cheers. So good for them for being able to break off and do their own thing.
Yeah, that's right. And Frasier was he Diane's boyfriend for a while or something?
He was his supposed to be in like three episodes. And mm-hmm. then the producers looked at what Kelsey Grammer was doing and says, we would be crazy to get rid of this guy.
Mm-hmm. And what about, let's talk about Cheers. That's the, that made the top five. One of, I guess, the only comedy, well, The Simpsons is a comedy, but
yes.
But what made Cheers so great?
Our feeling was Cheers is the pinnacle of what's called the multi-camera sitcom format, which is shot on a stage in front of a live studio audience, which goes back all the way back to I Love Lucy. We just felt that's the pinnacle of that form. It's the most consistent, the sharpest. Like The Simpsons, it stayed great for a really long time. You can split it basically into two shows. So you have the 5 years with Sam and Diane, which is just this amazing romantic comedy, and then the other 6 years with Rebecca, played by Kirstie Alley, which is just sort of punchline for punchline, as funny as television gets. So you add those together, and that's a top five show.
Is it just me, or are we not seeing as many sitcoms on anymore?
We're seeing them, but they're not. They don't look like what you think of as sitcom, like Cheers, like a Lucy, like a Cosby Show. They're much more, they're shot on film. They look like little movies. A lot of the time, they're more towards a dramatic vein, like a Transparent, even though they're classified as comedy. But there are still, I mean, there's still Big Bang Theory. CBS still makes the more traditional kinds of shows. ABC has lots of family comedies, but they're shot on film without a laugh track. But, you know, my kids watch a lot of, like, old-fashioned-looking sitcoms on Disney Channel and Nick, and so you've got a whole generation growing up that is going to be used to that as the comedy form, and I wouldn't be surprised to see a bigger comeback of that on the networks and elsewhere as those kids grow up into adults.
Our guest is Alan Sepinwall. He is the co-author of TV, the Book. Two experts pick the greatest American shows of all time. He's telling us what he thinks are among the greatest TV shows ever, and we're welcoming your questions for him or and your nominations. What's your favorite TV show ever and why? What do you think was the greatest TV show of all? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Chris in Stevens Point is with us. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for having a show like this. This is really nice. I wanted to mention an old show that kind of had a lot of influence for me was the John Lauriquette Show, which was very dark comedy. It was very different for the time that it came on. And I'm just wondering where that, I mean, if you've ever heard of it even.
I've heard of the John Lauriquette Show. That was the one he did after Night Court. He worked in a bus station, was a recovering alcoholic. That was a really interesting show. It didn't finish in our top 100, but I remember really liking a lot of the things it was trying to do at the time and admiring sort of its boldness at a time when it was much harder to do a sitcom that could go to that dark place than it is right now.
Do you remember what made 101?
Oh, God. It might have been Will and Grace. It might have been Star Trek The Next Generation. I would have to look at the spreadsheet. But there was we ranked over 250 shows, and we wound up at this top 100. And then there's other sections of the book where we talk about current shows, where we talk about miniseries, TV movies, the live plays of the 1950s. And then there's a whole like honorable mention section for shows we love in whole or in parts, but that we didn't think were top 100 worthy, but we just wanted to write about anyway.
Patty in Madison is with us now. Hi, Patty.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I'm cheating because I have two shows that are similar to me in their quirkiness, and one was Boston Legal and the other one was Northern Exposure, which I just adored. I wonder if either of those two made the list.
Northern Exposure is in our top 100. Boston Legal is not, but we do have a different show from David E. Kelley, who created Boston Legal. Picket Fence is in the top 100.
Oh, yeah. Well, that Northern Exposure was she called it quirky, and at the time that seemed to be pretty quirky.
Yes. I mean, that was sort of the quintessential fish out of water kind of show. New York doctor winds up having to work in a remote Alaska town where they don't know what a bagel is, and there's always a moose wandering through the thoroughfare. That was a really fun show for quite a while, and a bit of a departure for CBS at the time.
Yeah. And Twin Peaks, that was just weird.
Twin Peaks was weird. Twin Peaks, I think, finished somewhere in our top in the top 25, 23rd overall. That's a very strange show that is among the most influential shows that's ever been made. It's the strangest show to ever be a big hit, even if it was only a big hit for about 2 months. And that helped lead to The X-Files and Lost and a lot of other things that have been made in this century, which is one of the reasons why there's going to be a revival on Showtime sometime probably next year.
Yeah. And I don't get to watch a lot of TV just because of my hours, and I don't tape as much as I should, but I understand Twin Peaks is one of the shows that's making a comeback. Is that a growing trend where some of these hits are coming back?
It is. It's not my favorite trend because, for the most part, these revival seasons have not been very good. The X-Files revival was pretty lousy. Mm-hmm. The Arrested Development season on Netflix I didn't think was very good, although my co-author disagrees with that strength. I'm hopeful Twin Peaks, the revival, will be good. But on the other hand, if it's not, it's not going to be boring because David Lynch just makes such weird content that it will be memorably awful if it's awful.
Let's go to Glenn in Stoughton right now. Hi, Glenn. Glenn.
Yes.
Go ahead. What do you love?
I want to throw out a vote there for Parks and Recreation.
Why? What do you like about that?
Parks and Recreation was such a perfect little show, hilarious, weird, but also very sweet and positive at a time when we really needed a show that was positive and but not overly sentimental, and I really miss it.
You know, what did you think of Parks and Recreation?
I adore Parks and Rec. It finished 46th, and if you ask me which show in the top 100 is ranked too low, I will tell you Parks and Rec. The way we set up the ranking system, two of the six categories are innovation and influence. Parks and Rec was not innovative because it was copying The Office, where its producers had worked before. It was not influential because almost nobody watched, but it was so great in every other field that it finished as highly as it did. It actually finished ahead of The Office by a few spots, and yeah, that's one of my all-time favorites.
And so I was going to ask about The Office. The Office made the list as well?
Yeah, The Office made the list. I think that finished 52nd overall, so a few spots back because it was less consistent than Parks and Rec, even though it was slightly more original, though. It was obviously a remake of a British show.
And you mentioned how you loved Parks and Rec. Is there a show that you enjoyed that's not in your list but because it didn't meet the criteria?
I mean, there's some there, and again, we cheated by having this honorable mention section just because I'm staring up at the poster that sits above my desk. I'm going to say Chuck, which was sort of a nerdy comedy on NBC in the aughts, and starring a nerd who works at a big box store who becomes a spy by accident. I always really enjoyed that. I don't know that it was ever even close to being great TV, but it's a sentimental favorite of mine.
Giovanni in Eau Claire is with us now. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. So I know that he mentioned The Simpsons is one of the best shows, but one of Matt Groening, I think his name is, one of his other shows, Futurama, is probably my favorite show ever. And then also there was the American anime, Avatar, The Last Airbender, and The Legend of Korra. Probably is the best character progression I've ever seen in a children's show. So I was just wondering if there's any other cartoons or either adult or children ones that were on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Futurama did make the top 100. I loved Avatar and Korra. Those didn't make the list. We do have some other cartoons in there, including SpongeBob, which finished very highly, The Rocky and Bullwinkle Show, Batman the Animated Series. One of our criteria was, just because we didn't want to open too big a can of worms, we weren't really considering shows made for kids because there's just it would be too complicated. But we felt if a show was so good that we could love it even if no children were present, we would consider it.
Yeah. And The Simpsons really kind of started that out. The animated shows aimed at adults can succeed on television.
Indeed. I mean, there had been others. You know, The Flintstones was in prime time back in the 60s, although I guess that was more family-oriented. But it had been done before. That no one has ever done anything as well as The Simpsons has done it, though.
Yeah, I liked watching The Simpsons, too. But, I mean, even as a TV critic, does it surprise you and a lover of The Simpsons that a cartoon is the best TV show of all time?
Why should it surprise me if it's great? I feel like sometimes we have, both as critics and just as fans in general, a bias against comedy and to a degree a bias against animation. I heard someone on Twitter the other day objecting to the idea that we scored Simpsons relatively highly for performance and characterization because it's voice acting. And he was acting basically as if, you know, all you have to do is show up and do a goofy voice and that's it, and it's not remotely equivalent to a flesh and blood actor appearing on camera, but it's still a performance. The animators have to fill in all the things that the voice actor can't do because they're not appearing. The characters still have to be, you know, pardon the pun, drawn as well as they are. An animated show and a comedy can be just as great, if not greater, than a drama. I don't agree with that thought.
On your list, we see classic shows like I Love Lucy, which you brought up a time or two, The Honeymooners, The Andy Griffith Show, but there doesn't seem to be a whole lot more from that era. Why do you think that is?
TV is better now. Obviously, it was possible to be great back then because we do have those shows. We have The Twilight Zone, The Defenders, East Side, West Side, a bunch of shows from the 50s and the 60s, and increasingly as you get into the 70s and especially the 80s. But it was just so much harder to try to achieve true artistic greatness in the early decades of the medium because the people running the show had no interest in that. They didn't even conceive of TV as anything other than something you used to sell soap. So it was just so hard to do it. The bar for success was so much greater, whereas now, because of things like The Sopranos, because of the boom in cable and in streaming and everything else, a lot of the restrictions have been lessened. People can do more of what they want to do, and so there's more variety, there's more ambition. And so, yeah, I mean, the book is definitely weighted much more towards recent things, but there's a lot of great stuff from the first few decades of television, and one of the sections I'm sort of happiest we include, even though I doubt many people are going to pay much attention to it, is that list of the 10 greatest live plays of the 1950s, like Marty, because, like, that was the first golden age of television, and it's largely forgotten now because it would be unrecognizable to somebody who loves a Breaking Bad or a Mad Men or a Wire, but it was great in its own right.
We will continue talking with our guest, Alan Sepinwall, who is a TV critic and the co-author of TV, the Book, Two Experts Pick the Greatest American Shows of All Time. That list includes Cheers, Breaking Bad, The Wire, The Sopranos, and number one on the list, The Simpsons. And we wonder what your favorite TV show was or what show you would put on the greatest TV shows of all time. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Can't see our troubles all on the same. You want to be where everybody knows your name.
What I really need is a computer. How about that one?
Mm-hmm. That technology is 3 months old. Only suckers buy out-of-date machines. Hey, you're not a sucker, are you, sir?
Heavens, no!
Oh, good. Because if you were, I'd have to ask you to leave the store.
I just need something to receive email.
You'll need a top-of-the-line machine for that.
Poor Homer Simpson. The Simpsons, named the best TV show ever by our guest, Alan Sepinwall, who is the co-author of TV, the Book. Two experts pick the greatest American shows of all time. And so there are 100 on the list with The Simpsons topping it off. What would you put at the top of the list? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is Dave in Elkhorn. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to throw out two shows and see if they're on your list and get any comments you have. The first would be Soap, and the second would be Pushing Daisies.
I remember watching both of those.
Soap finished in the top 100. Matt, my co-author, wrote about it in sort of an essay on various shows like Mary Hartman, that were TV shows about being TV shows in a way. So that was a real groundbreaker. And Pushing Daisies is a show I liked a lot, maybe my favorite of the different Brian Fuller sort of quirky shows that he did in that era. That didn't make it. The only Brian Fuller show in the top 100 is Hannibal.
Let's go next to John in Medford. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your favorite show, or what show do you think belongs on the list?
Well, my favorite show of all time, and it is of a number of my peers, was the very short-run sci-fi show called Firefly.
Why was that a favorite, John?
Well, it didn't have the best special effects in the world, but for a science fiction show, it was pretty amazing that they got a lot of the science right. But really what made the show the best of all was that it had an ensemble cast of very unique and very distinctive characters that they somehow were able to make gel together. And the storytelling element of the show was fantastic. Sometimes it was, you know, more focused on action. Sometimes it was more comedy. There are a couple episodes in particular which were very emotional, very sad. But what was really interesting about the show was that it had a huge, huge fan base, and yet the network pulled it after it didn't even finish the first season due to a conflict with another show on their channel, and yet so many fans tried to get them to revive the show over a number of years, and eventually it did spawn a feature-length film. But more than anything, the vast array of well-acted and very unique, very diverse, multi-dimensional characters was what made Firefly such a joy to watch.
Thank you, John. I've never heard of it. Alan?
Firefly is a show Joss Whedon did. He's the guy who created Buffy the Vampire Slayer, obviously has directed the Avengers movies. So he's done well for himself, and they eventually did turn Firefly into a movie. It's an outer space Western mashup, and thus was kind of doomed from the start because neither of those genres has great commercial track records at the time he did it. And when you put the two of them together, you're just asking for trouble. I like that show a lot. It did finish in the top 100. So, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, John, for that. Speaking of science fiction, it's the 50th anniversary of Star Trek this year, and we have some listeners chiming in on Facebook that they want to nominate Star Trek as the best show of all time. That show actually was kind of I shouldn't say a flop. I mean, it was on the air for a couple of years, but it wasn't all that well received at the time, was it?
It was clinging to life by the skin of its teeth, and yeah, the third season was largely because of fan involvement. Both the original Star Trek and Star Trek Deep Space Nine finished in our top 100, and we wrote about Star Trek The Next Generation in that honorable mention section. Star Trek, hugely influential, very socially important, on top of being a really fun show.
Did you say it was cling on to life?
I wish I had, or perhaps I regret that I did. I can't decide.
That was good, though. Well, Chris Molina picked up on that. Allie in Lake Geneva is with us. Hi, Allie.
Hi. My all-time favorite show is The West Wing. And that's a show that my husband and I have watched from start to finish probably at least 5 times. We never get tired of it. Not only is it entertaining, it's really educational. It actually helped me to learn a lot about our government. And I was just wondering how that fell on your list. Hopefully it did.
Yeah, no, West Wing is on the list. It finished, it finished the 37th overall, which I've already heard from a number of people. That's perhaps the show whose placement seems to rankle the most. Everyone thinks it should be higher. We love it a lot, but it went through different phases. So there were 2 great years from Aaron Sorkin, 2 pretty good years from Aaron Sorkin, then 2 years that were kind of a mess under the new producer, and then 1 very good year at the end. So it had its ups and downs, but when it was good, it's among the best things that's ever been on TV.
Thank you, Allie, for bringing that up. You know, I saw a story on your book, TV, the book, that said, 2 critics have come up with a top 100 list of the best TV shows ever, and they already know you're going to hate it.
I mean, I showed a galley copy of the book to my mother, and her first comment was, "Where's this show? Where's that show? I've never heard of this. How can this be in here ahead of I Remember Mama?" So everybody's going to have their own favorites, and we get that. We wanted to do this as much to sort of spark conversation and get people calling in, like your callers, to say, I love this show, or, God, now I'm remembering that show. And so we would hope that people will look at this and think about what they value most, but also look at it as kind of a resource for how best to navigate a world when there's literally too many things on television to watch. And I hear all the time from people say, like, I'm watching this show, I don't even know if I like it, but I'm kind of afraid to try something else. And now you don't have to do that because you can access not only all the great shows now, but the best of all time pretty easily.
So if my favorite TV show is not on your top 100, does that mean it was a crummy show?
We literally ask that question in the introduction of the book, and I believe our answer is no, unless your favorite show was Work It, which was a really bad comedy about two guys who cross-dressed to get jobs as pharma reps a couple of years ago.
It's, my God. Did they copy Bosom Buddies? That
they did. It was a show about the alleged man session, and the idea was, like, men can't get jobs anymore unless they pretend to be women. It was canceled very, very quickly. It was not good.
That sounds terrible.
But, yeah, no, it's look. If your favorite show isn't in our top 100, that doesn't mean it's not good. That doesn't mean we're judging you for it. Just these are the shows that we, after a lot of discussion, felt were our 100 best. But even now, like, we have sort of arguments all the time, and Matt doesn't agree with everything that's on the list, and I don't agree with everything that's on the list or where it's placed. You know, if you get even two people together, you're going to have disputes, let alone all of the people who watch and love American TV.
Our lines are full, so let's get back. Lynn in Rushford, Minnesota. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Back at a time when I was hardly watching any TV at all, one show I couldn't miss was All in the Family, and I really thought this was a groundbreaking program. Just curious about your ideas about this one. And then also I'm wondering, do you rank PBS, kind of their sagas, too, when you do your ratings? Thanks.
All in the Family finished at number 10. Great show. Maude is also in the top 100, which was one of its spinoffs. We also wrote about Good Times, which was technically a spinoff of Maude elsewhere in the book. So Norman Lear, hugely influential, hugely important producer. Great show. In terms of the PBS stuff, I assume you're referring to like the various British miniseries that they air on Sunday nights. One of the rules we had was we were only going to consider American shows, just because while we've seen a lot of great British series, not some other foreign series, and things like Fawlty Towers and Prime Suspect would probably rank very highly. We don't really know what the best stuff from England or France or Italy or anywhere else is. We just know the best stuff that came over here to America because someone had a business arrangement with PBS. And so while we know pretty much all of American TV pretty well, we didn't feel like we were going to come across as anything but tourists if we tried expanding it beyond that.
And you weren't looking at, I don't know, Ken Burns documentaries or Nature,
it's scripted TV only.
Yeah. Let's go to Steve in Eagle. Hi, Steve. I'm sorry, in Eagle.
Good morning. Thank you. Good morning. Community was only on for a few seasons, I think pretty inconsistent, but in my mind, the funniest show I've ever seen. Incredibly innovative writing, and I wanted to see if it managed to rise up to your list. The other one's a little bit old school. Meet the Press, 60 Minutes, used to be topping these lists. I don't know if their effectiveness has been watered down by other media over the years. And finally, Carol Burnett, I remember fondly as a child. I wanted to see if any of those show up on your list. Thanks.
Go ahead.
Community's in the top 100. The others weren't eligible. Again, we were going to try to rank everything. And so you would have The Sopranos competing with Carol Burnett, competing with 60 Minutes, competing with Sesame Street, competing with like 17 other things that you really can't compare and that you really can't come up with common judging criteria for. And so at a certain point, we decided this was just a fool's errand and also the book would be way too long. And so we limited it basically to sitcoms and dramas. So no talk shows, no news, no sports, no sketch, no variety, none of those other things. So, you know, Carol Burnett's great. The 60 Minutes would have finished very highly if it had been eligible, but Community, of the ones he asked about, is the only one in the top 100, and it ran six seasons. So that's a pretty healthy run for any show, let alone one that was as low-rated for pretty much its entire run as that one.
Thank you, Steve. Next, we go to Jeanette in Milwaukee. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, great show. I like Barney Miller, and I've been listening to your list, and I wondered why I don't like anything much anymore, and I wonder if it's because the commercials are so much more frequent nowadays than they seem to were in those years of Barney Miller and Mary Tyler Moore.
Barney Miller finished in the top 100, a really great workplace comedy, and for a long time, if you asked any cop what was the most realistic cop show of all time, they would usually point to Barney Miller. Mm-hmm. So that's a fun one, and you're right, the commercial load is much bigger now on both network and cable TV. You go back and you watch some of these earlier things, like a sitcom episode would have run 25, 26 minutes long out of the half hour. Now it's maybe 20 and a half minutes. So there's many more commercials than there used to be, and one of the things I recommend often is, like, you get a subscription to a streaming service like Netflix, like Amazon, like Hulu, you can watch without the ads, and it's such a different experience and so much better.
Thank you, Jeanette. Next, we go to Anne in Green Bay. Hi, Anne.
Hello. Well, my favorite is Seinfeld, and I'm just wondering if that made the list.
Seinfeld's in the top 10. It was originally the very first time we did the rankings, it actually finished number one. And it finished number one because my co-author, Matt, gave it perfect scores across the board. And I looked at him and I said, Matt, are you giving this perfect scores across the board because you actually think it's the best show of all time? Or are you giving it perfect scores across the board because you just watched the entire series with your kids and therefore you're sort of giddy from that experience?
And
he thought about
it
for a minute and he said, yeah, it's because of my kids.
Yeah. But what made it, it was the show about nothing and all that. That's what made it so innovative.
It was a show about nothing that was also about everything. Like, think about how many different concepts in life we now have a name for thanks to Seinfeld. It was innovative. It was sort of like the anti-hero comedy. It's about four pretty despicable people. The rule that Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David had was no hugging, no learning. And it was structurally, in terms of the kinds of stories it told and the way that it told them, no one had ever really done that before. And it's funny because that finished in the top 10, and Curb Your Enthusiasm, which Larry David did afterwards and is very similar, finished a little bit lower. And more often than not, if we had two shows by the same creative team, one on cable, one on network, the cable show tended to finish higher. But Seinfeld, I think, was just a funnier and more consistent show, even than Curb.
Yeah, we've been concentrating, where I was concentrating earlier in the hour, on the top five. Is there any in the top 10 that we haven't talked about yet?
We mentioned Lucy, and we mentioned All in the Family, so we haven't talked about Mad Men or Deadwood.
All right, so Mad Men, yeah, that's a fairly recent one, but why was that so influential?
Mad Men sort of helped define the latter half of this new modern golden age of TV, in that Sopranos was done. It ended about a month before Mad Men did. A bunch of the other shows from the early part of the aughts were wrapping up, and it seemed like, okay, maybe this is going to peter out, and that was just a fluke. And then along comes Mad Men on a channel that nobody really watched, or if they did, they thought of it as the second best classic movie channel. And suddenly here's along comes a show that's basically doing Sopranos kind of thing on the Sopranos level of quality, and telling this great historical story with so much detail and so much focus on character and imagery and symbolism and everything else. And it was just so thematically rich and so well characterized and such great dialogue that it was an easy choice. And it could very well have finished in the top five, too. I think we probably dinged it a couple points just because it was so influenced by Sopranos, including the fact that its creator had worked on The Sopranos.
Yeah. Deadwood, very briefly, what was great about that?
Deadwood is one of those where people seem most surprised that it's in our top 10 because it's a little bit forgot. It only ran three seasons. It was supposed to run at least four, and so people say, oh, it's this unfinished show. But we think the three seasons are that extraordinary. The dialogue by David Milch especially is so good. And it's this Western that's really about how civilizations get formed, and the characterization, the performances, especially by Ian McShane as sort of the pirate king of Deadwood before it joined America, a man named Al Swearengen, are just so indelible. And, I mean, if it had done that four season, that might have wound up in the top five, too.
Yeah, well, it's only a minute to go. It's time for new TV seasons and premieres. Any shows, especially new ones, that we should pay attention to, do you think?
There's a lot. This is a really good fall for TV. FX has a couple of shows called Atlanta with Donald Glover and Better Things with Pamela Adlon that I like a lot. Amazon keeps releasing new stuff. They have this British import show called Fleabag that just debuted on Friday that I found just fascinating and marvelous and hilarious and moving. Pitch is a new show Fox is doing about the first female pitcher in Major League Baseball. I thought that was really much better than I expected it to be. I'm going to have a hard time just making space on the DVR and making time in my calendar to watch it all.
This has been a lot of fun. Thanks very much for being with us.
It's been my absolute pleasure.
Alan Sepinwall is a TV critic, writer of the segment What's Alan Watching for HitFix.com. He's also the co-author of TV the Book. Two experts pick the greatest American shows of all time. Thank you so much to our producers, Chris Molina and Kai Brito and Bill Martins and Brianne Shasso. And thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.